Monday through Friday at this time, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents Service Time. Every Tuesday afternoon, this program is devoted to the men who sail the ships of the United States Merchant Marine. In cooperation with the War Shipping Administration, Columbia brings you It's Maritime. It's Maritime, a program dramatizing the history and color of the American Merchant Marine. This is the story of the sea, the story of maritime America. Today you'll hear about two people who went to sea, a Massachusetts housewife and a boy from Texas. There'll be music with Ensign Philip Lang directing the orchestra of the Maritime Service Training Station of Cheapside Bay. Yes, it's maritime. Back in 1906, a song was sung at the annual Army-Navy football game that was destined for immediate fame. The words were written by midshipman Alfred Miles, the music composed by Charles Zimmerman, who for 34 years was conductor of the Naval Academy Band. In 1907, this same song was adopted as the official song of the Academy. And today, Anchors Away is still the favorite song of the United States Navy. Every phase of New England life was influenced by the sea. For instance, when two ladies met in the streets of Salem, you could hear a conversation like this.
Good morning, Mrs. Bradshaw. Looks like we're in for some squally weather.
Yes, there's a smacking breeze.
A royal breeze.
Oh, there goes Mrs. Peabody.
Morning, Mrs. Peabody.
She can hardly nod her head in that dress.
Fits her like a shirt on a marlin spike.
Yes, the seamen of old New England brought home a rich language of their own that was used in everyday speech. Their voyages, in fact, affected every phase of their lives and their homes.
Now, take the houses of New England. Those situated along the coast were usually built by ship's carpenters and had a solid, seaworthy look about them. More often than not, there was a captain's walk crowning the roof. This was a roof deck from which the harbor could be scanned.
Those roof decks were also called widow's walks, for it was usually the wife who walked there looking out to sea for a glimpse of her husband's ship.
No sight of the Zephyr, Mrs. Cleveland?
No, Agatha. No trace of her.
Oh, she's long overdue, ain't she?
I've come up here every day for the past 2 months to look for my husband's ship. It's the last time I'm going to pace the widow's walk.
What do you mean, Mrs. Cleveland?
When my husband sails on his next voyage, I'm sailing with him.
Mrs. William Cleveland was the wife of one of Salem's most famous sea captains. At that time, a captain's wife never went to sea with him. It was considered bad luck to have a woman aboard ship. But Mrs. Cleveland was not one easily daunted by superstition. When the Zephyr sailed again on the 29th day of October, 1828, Mrs. Cleveland was aboard the ship, bound for the faraway Pacific.
Well, what are you doing, my dear?
I'm painting a picture of one of your men. I brought my watercolors with me to make a record of the voyage.
Well, my dear, You'll be able to paint scenes no American woman has ever witnessed before.
I've also begun a journal of our voyage, which I'll illustrate with my painting.
Including a portrait of your husband?
You're the captain. And since I won't have pictures of all the crew, I'll certainly have to include one of my husband.
Mrs. Cleveland rode and painted all the way south and around Cape Horn. She had a genuine love for the sea and thoroughly enjoyed bad weather. Conditions aboard ship were at their brightest during that period. Mrs. Cleveland made a presence felt among the crew, not only in the matter of their dress, but also their welfare. The captain's wife covered the entire ship. She peered into every corner, questioned every member of the crew.
How much pay do you get a month?
$8, ma'am.
And how much will you receive when you're an able seaman?
$12, ma'am. But it isn't the money.
No?
It's the chance for advancement I'm interested in. Someday I want to be captain of my own ship.
Good for you, lad. Good for you.
But one can be just a little too kind, as the captain learned. During the voyage, the captain's wife tried some innovations, which proved to be somewhat unpopular with the crew.
Captain Cleveland.
Yes, Mr. Perkins. What is it?
Well, sir, I'm never a man to complain,
I
Captain.
See. Well, what's wrong?
Well, sir, the crew's asked me to speak to you about our food.
Well, what's the matter with the food?
Well, it's all them vegetables and them chickens and hams.
My wife had them brought aboard at the last port. Fresh vegetables won't hold out much longer. We've enough live chickens and pigs to last quite a spell.
Well, we don't like it, sir.
Yeah, but Mrs. Cleveland thought the crew would enjoy a change in diet.
No, sir. We like our salt meat. Now, Captain, this food is all flummadiddles and fiddle paddles. Why, Captain, when it comes to genuine grub, we like our salt meat. You eat it before you turn in, you can feel it all night, laying in your stomach and nourishing you. Just what we like, Captain.
Mrs. Cleveland's innovations were not popular with the crew. But in spite of that, she continued to sail on her husband's ship, the Zephyr, to Canton and Sarawak, Calcutta and Yalta. Lucy Cleveland, who refused to pace the widow's walk, was the first American woman to inspect most of these foreign ports from an American merchant ship. A love song that's direct and to the point. Petty Officer Tommy Mercer sings, "I Don't Care Who Knows It."
I guess
answering love songs in the positive manner. Right now, it's Petty Officer Lenny Gaynor singing, I'm Gonna Love That Gal.
I'm gonna love that gal like she's never been loved before. I'm gonna show that gal she's a baby that I adore.
Thanksgiving Day, 1943, Captain Morgan Maxey, master of the American tanker Cedar Mills, and his first mate stood on the bridge as the ship weighed anchor and prepared to head out to sea.
Well, Captain Maxey, this has been a strange Thanksgiving Day, I must say. Here we're far away from home, down here in Australia, and it's summer.
Yeah, it didn't seem much like Thanksgiving, except for the turkey we had for dinner.
Sir, ship's cook really did us proud, Captain. Turkey and all the fixings. Oh, where are we heading for, sir? Back home across the Pacific?
Not this time, mister. We're headed across the Indian Ocean to Karachi.
India?
We're sailing with a Dutch freighter, Java. Our cargo's so valuable, they're giving us an escort.
An escort? Well, you mean for just the two of us?
Yes, mister. They're sending a French destroyer along with us, the Triumphant. She's going to look out for us all the way to India.
She is, Jim.
Yeah, ain't she a beauty, Bill? Look at her shoot through the water.
Now, there's her name, Le Triomphant.
They say she's one of the fastest ships in the world.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. She escaped from the Nazis after the fall of France and sailed to England.
What do you know?
Then she crossed the United States and came on out to the Southwest Pacific for active duty.
Well, she sure is a beauty, Jim.
Well, we've got one thing to be thankful for on this Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
This French baby, Bill. She's going to protect us all the way to India. Nothing can happen to you with a ship like that watching out for you.
But something did happen. The three ships ran into a sudden tropical squall. Huge waves crashed down on the ships. Gusts of wind clawed at the seamen as they went about their work. Something happened. Trouble came to their escort, the Triumphant. On November 29th, Captain Maxey received a message from the French destroyer that she was unable to proceed in the storm without refueling. The Cedar Mills hauled into the wind 4 points on port bow to make a lee for the operation.
Keep paying on that hose till the Frenchman's signal is to stop.
Aye, aye, sir.
She has a towing line now. We'll keep up a speed in advance of 8 knots while the hose runs between the two ships. There should be no difficulty as long as the French ship stays abreast of it.
Look, Captain! She's taking a sheer, coming straight at our starboard side!
She's gonna smash into us!
The French destroyer crashed into the Cedar Mills and dented some of the tanker's plates. As they pulled apart again, the towing line snapped, and the destroyer dropped astern. They managed to get another towing line to the French destroyer to take her in tow until the weather improved sufficiently to refuel her. They proceeded so slowly that the Cedar Mills was an easy mark for any submarine. On the second day of December, the Cedar Mills again attempted to refuel the Triumphant, although the weather had considerably worsened.
Say, Jim, I thought the French ship was supposed to be looking after us. And here we are looking after her.
Hold that line tight, Bill, and quit yammering,
okay,
will you?
Okay, okay.
If she pulls what's more, the cold will be able to take it.
Yeah, this would be an easy job if the weather would only clear. But in a gale like this...
Oh, there goes our coal mine!
Yeah, and there goes the French destroyer!
The Triumphant fell back out of sight through the storm. The two ships were now in an area of tremendous danger, an area noted for its cyclones.
Signal the French destroyer. Tell her to keep a good distance to avoid collision.
Aye, aye, sir.
The Triumphant was in real trouble. She was drifting with a storm, with a 45-degree list and no steam. The seas were mountainous, and our barometer was falling. This sea's too rough for us to launch lifeboats.
What do we do, Captain?
Prepare to evacuate the crew from the French ship by lifeline.
Aye, aye, sir.
First, we'd better cruise back and forth on her weather side and distribute oil on the sea. That'll prevent water from washing over her decks. Keep her afloat till morning.
Oh, she sinks in the night.
Tell our captain to send up a green rocket if she starts to go down. Let's hope she'll stay afloat until dawn.
Came, the French destroyer was still afloat, but badly battered by the storm. Her captain reported that she was settling and asked for help. They were without bread, fresh water, and medical supplies. The storm made it impossible to use the regular lifeboats, so they put two motorboats into the water. One of them got water in its gasoline and had to be handled with oars. They worked all that day through the storm and managed to get 33 men and one officer off the French ship. That night they stood by, hoping that once again the destroyer would stay afloat until dawn. Next morning, December the 5th, she was still afloat, but listing badly.
All we need is another tow line, Captain. Every line snaps in this gale.
Why not use our anchor chain?
Hey?
The anchor chain. Use it as a hawser. I guarantee you'll hold.
All right, sir. We'll try it.
At the same time, put two more boats over the side and get the rest of the crew off the French ship.
Have to be careful today, Captain. He's full of sharks.
We'll give some of our men rifles and tell them to shoot any sharks they see. But get that anchor chain across to the French ship before you do anything else.
The crew managed to get the anchor chain over to the crippled destroyer. At the same time, the two lifeboats rescued 73 men, 14 petty officers, 4 officers, and all confidential papers from the French ship. The crew never rested. When asked for volunteers to take the lifeboats, all hands responded. The purser, assisted by some of the mess men, attended to the sick and wounded, providing hot soup, coffee, and dry clothing. And that anchor chain turned out to be a pretty good idea.
Look at that blue sky.
Yeah, I sure hope this weather holds till we get to India.
We're going to look funny towing our escort into port.
Yeah. She was supposed to watch out for us.
Instead, we've had to watch out for her.
Hey.
Huh?
Look, Bill. There's some kind of cruiser up ahead.
Hey, she's British.
Yeah, looks like she's heading straight for us.
The British cruiser took the rescued French crew aboard and also took over the towing hawser. Captain Morgan Maxey proceeded on to Karachi, where he arrived safely on the 17th of December. The British Commander-in-Chief of the Eastern Fleet commented,
"I have read with admiration the report of the assistance you furnished the French destroyer Le Triomphant, and I am forwarding it to the British Admiralty. I wish to congratulate you, your officers and crew, on the magnificent seamanship and gallantry displayed on this occasion."
Captain Maxey and his crew had performed one of the most daring rescues of the entire war. of the most popular tunes ever to come north from South America had its origin in Brazil. A small swing combination under the direction of Petty Officer Bobby Martin plays Tico Tico. Guest who is a famous chef, Mr. Leon DeRutter. I understand, Mr. DeRutter, that you went to sea for the first time when you were very young.
Yes, I ran away from my home in Belgium and went to sea as a mess boy.
And from that, you went on to become a famous chef.
Well, I've worked in some famous hotels and restaurants, both here and in Europe. Recently, I've been chef for a club high up on top of a New York skyscraper.
But you're still interested in cooks who go to sea?
Oh, yes. I am labor chief of the kitchen department of the New York Hotel and Club Employees Union, Local 6, which is cooperating with the worshipping administration in its drive to recruit cooks, butchers, bakers, and messmen for the merchant marine.
Well, with so many soldiers returning from Europe, you must require a great many experienced men to prepare and serve meals aboard ship.
We need about 6,000 experienced food handlers. You see, the lack of one qualified cook can delay the sailing of one ship.
Well, I had no idea that one man could be so important.
His job is so important that I have taken a leave of absence from my own job and registered for sea duty as long as I am needed. It's my opinion that many other experienced food handlers would do the same thing if they only know how badly they are needed.
Mr. DeRutter, what about sea experience?
For a job in the stewards department of a merchant ship, it's not necessary to have a sea experience. You only need to bring proof of shore experience in the restaurant kitchens or dining rooms.
I know you're doing a first-rate job, Mr. DeRutter, one that must be done to help bring our boys home from Europe.
If there are any cooks, bakers, butchers, or messmen listening to us, there is a job waiting for them on the merchantman ship.
That's right. Cooks, bakers, butchers, or messmen. They should report to their local union or wire collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C.
And they should do it today. The need is urgent.
Now, music. It has long ago become a jazz classic. It's Rosetta.
Thank you.
Maritime, one of a series of service time programs which is brought to you every day, Monday through Friday. It's Maritime is presented each Tuesday afternoon in cooperation with the War Shipping Administration. The music was played by the orchestra of the United States Maritime Service Training Station of Sheepshead Bay under the direction of Ensign Philip Lang. Join us again next week when it's Maritime. Written by Vincent McConner, narrated by George Tiplady, and directed by Ronald Dawson. Tomorrow, Service Time, in collaboration with the United States Army, will present Wax on Parade.